Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is May 3rd, 2017. And guess what? I am interviewing Giovanni, which he happened to comment on his birthday. So happy birthday, Giovanni.
Thank you.
Giovanni is a ripe old age of how old today?
28.
28 years old. Two years from 30.
2 years.
And I remember when I was 28 years ago, coming up to 30 was rough. Is it for you too?
I'm optimistic, but it is a milestone, yeah.
Okay. And so if you don't know who Giovanni is one of our worship leaders at our church. How long have you been doing the worship team?
I think I've been here for about 3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So give or take a year.
Yeah.
Exactly. 3 or 4 years.
3, 4, 5.
I've been here 5, 17 years. Who knows? It just seems long. Okay. So let's go back to when you were young. Mm-hmm. And tell us about your upbringing. When your parents and your siblings and how many brothers and sisters you had.
Okay.
Still have
all of them. Thank God. I grew up in Boyle Heights in East LA.
Okay.
I grew up with a big family.
Okay.
Eight in total.
Now, what's big? Eight?
Eight. Well,
good night.
Eight is enough.
And how many brothers and sisters? All brothers?
Six girls and two boys.
Six girls and two boys. And where do you fit in that category of eight?
Third born with two older sisters.
Okay, so you have two older sisters. Is your brother right after you, or?
He is, I think, just about 4 or 5 years younger than
me. Okay, so just curiosity, your oldest sister is how old?
She's 3 years older than me.
3 years older than you.
So she's
30.
Yeah, 31, yeah.
Okay, 31. And your youngest sister is?
17
years old.
18, yeah.
Okay, so basically there's a broad 13-year difference that your mother was having children.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about this. Good childhood at the beginning?
We had a good childhood. I think we enjoyed our company a lot. Our mom kept us, you know, inside the house a lot because it was East LA in the 90s, so we weren't going to be running around the streets. And we grew up, you know, poor. So,
right.
You know, but yeah.
How many bedrooms was your home?
It was three.
Three bedrooms, three. Eight kids.
Eight kids.
I'm just curious. This is a weird question. And one or two bathrooms?
Two.
Two bathrooms.
Two bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. So two bathrooms, eight kids, and six girls.
Yeah.
Good looking in the bathroom. Okay,
yeah.
But it worked. Somehow it worked.
Yeah.
All right? You just took showers once every 2 weeks.
Right.
So you grew up, and then all of a sudden, I would assume around 7, 8 years old, things began to change. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up close to my dad.
Okay.
You know, when I was real young, about 4 or 5 years old, I'd go everywhere with him. I'd go to work with him, all that stuff.
You would go to work with him?
Yeah,
a few
times.
Cool.
Yeah. It was fun. Good memories.
Okay.
And then I think about 8 years old, my parents ended up separating to eventually divorce.
Okay. So you had a special bond with your dad.
Yeah.
Okay. At 4 or 5 years old, because you can think, I'm having these good memories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So did your parents sit you down, all eight of you, and say, we're getting a divorce, or was it just happened?
No, I think we saw it coming. I think we could say that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we could say that. Yeah, my dad, you know, my
parents. Was Jerry Springer going on?
This was before Jerry Springer, but yeah.
Okay, but a lot of yelling and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely, yeah.
Definitely yelling.
Yeah.
And so your parents decided to separate.
Right.
And so now, who did you live with? You lived with?
We all stayed with my mom.
You stayed with
mom. In that same house in Boyle Heights.
Okay. Yeah. Now, as an 8-year-old, okay, that has to mess you up a little,
mm-hmm.
in a way. Did you get to the point where you just said, Dad, don't leave, Dad? Or were you trying to convince?
No, you know, my dad was having issues, you know, with drugs and alcohol and that type of thing.
Okay.
So we definitely understood why it had to happen.
Okay, yeah.
So it was better for all of us that happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us about how your relationship with your dad changed from when you were 4 or 5 years old to, you know, almost best friends, to I'm going to work with him and stuff like that, to when he left. Was there any dramatic changes in your relationship with your dad?
Well, a lot of the story is that he was in and out of jail.
Okay.
So we wouldn't see him for months. So that was part of it.
Okay.
And I think just after a few times of you know, being locked up, I think my mom said, you know, that's pretty much it, you know.
Okay.
It's not good for the kids to be around this.
Okay. So basically, you grew up in the beginning of saying, hey, dad's my best friend, we're doing really well,
mm-hmm.
to when your dad's going in and out of jail, it was like your dad was absent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how does someone as that young go to, my dad's my best friend, to, I don't have a dad, I don't even know where he is.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you deal with that? Or how did you deal with it? Or
did I deal with it?
Or did you deal with it? Yeah. Or you will deal with it when you have your own children.
Living it right now. I think, luckily, again, we grew up with a big family.
Right.
So it's not like we ever really felt too alone.
Okay.
You know, I had all my sisters. I like to make them laugh. I also like to bully them and stuff like that. So there was always movement in the house.
Right.
So it's not like we just had too much time to think about it. But at the same time, what that allows is for us to not deal with it, like we're saying. So I think the issues that I would deal with later on, I wouldn't see for a few more years. Because I was still growing up. I was a kid. I was going to school, you know, so.
Do you think you felt the responsibility to try to keep your sisters and your younger brothers happy? So you would take the jokester kind of role and make them laugh?
I think so. I think part of it was just cruel humor.
Yeah.
But I do definitely enjoy making them laugh. I've always said if I can make my sisters laugh and no one else, that's fine.
Okay. So you take joy in that and making your sisters laugh.
Yeah.
And I mean, they probably get annoyed at you trying to do
that. Yeah, of course. It's part of the fun.
It's like my wife. She married me because of my humor. Right. You know, she liked it. But, man, it just annoys the daylights out of her now.
Yeah.
Like, would you stop joking around? And then when she gets mad, I think it's funny.
Yeah.
I was telling, maybe like you, I tell jokes to crack myself up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's what I do.
Okay, so while growing up, the absence of your father, so did you see your mother going through a depression or just how did your mother handle this?
Well, my mom is very quiet, so she handled it in a very quiet way. She's also very tough.
And she had to be.
Yeah. So she was, you know, she was like stone a lot of times in a good way. It doesn't mean we never saw her, you know. Allow herself to be sensitive around us. We definitely did see that. But she just held it together, stayed composed, and somehow got us through, you know, childhood. Because imagine being a young mother with eight young kids. So we're all just about into adulthood now. Right.
And so when you were becoming a teenager, did you get to the point where you're just going, I'm going to start yelling at my dad. When I talk to him, I'm going to say, why did you... Did you have any type of conversation with him like that? Or did you just...
Yeah, I think I, maybe, you know, my early teens, 12, 13, I did kind of see him. And then there was this gap of a few years where I didn't really see him on and off, very rarely, certain events. So when that happened, when I finally, you know, felt ready, whatever it was came over me to let him know.
I started yelling with your dad or you were...
Right, that was at about 21, 22.
20, okay, so it's not too long ago.
It was...
6 years ago. Yeah, 7 years ago?
7 years ago, yeah. 6, 7 years ago.
Okay. Did that help you, or did it resolve thing, or did it change your dad, or just I threw it out there and I got it off my chest?
I think it helped both of us, yeah.
Okay.
I think it helped both of us to reconnect as best as we can and to stay connected as best as we can right now. Yeah.
Because I've noticed when you have those things, you become more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not going to be... what I needed, so I'm not going to have these expectations
mm-hmm.
with my dad after I yell at him that he's going to be this, you know, Brady Bunch dad, you know, and come and speak wisdom to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, you had that conversation, but still, to this day,
mm-hmm.
your dad's really not around.
Yeah, not around as much as I think he'd like to be. And that, I think, just has to do with... as big as my family is, I mean, it's that many more people that have to work through things.
Right.
So that's a whole family having to heal.
Right.
So that I think that's part of the reason why he's not around as much as he'd like to be. I know he'd like to be, but you got to respect everybody where they're at as far as healing and all that, you know.
Do a show up for Christmas and say, hey,
yeah,
here's all the gifts.
Yeah. All right.
You know, okay.
Yeah.
So when you grew up in, now you're in junior high and high school, how did that go? Because is this where you decided to follow Jesus?
Well, I grew up from a very young age going to Sunday school, okay. You know, and as good of a decision as a 5-year-old could make, you know, accepting Christ at a young age and going to Light and Life Christian right. school in East LA for about 4 years, kinder through third grade. So I understood a lot about Christ and the Bible and God and all that. So it was always a part of who I was growing right. up.
Now, East LA, the school, it doesn't exist now. It's a charter school now. Oh. But East LA was a Free Methodist private denomination, a school that was kind of built by the Fenwicks to reach inner city children, to give them a proper education and stuff. And this is where you met. Now, if you guys don't know, Brooke, who's been working with me for 18 years, we worked together at Light and Life because I was a pastor there at the church. And we'll talk about that later. And so Brooke was a principal when you went to that school. He was a teacher.
He was a principal.
He was a principal.
Yeah, he was Mr. Fenwick.
Mr. Fenwick. Yeah. He wasn't Brooke. Is that hard for you to now all of a sudden you're working with him and you go, or do you go in that student mode every time you see him?
I
would just go totally. So when you met Brooke, or what would you call Mr. Fenwick,
yeah.
you were how old?
I must have been 4 or 5 years old.
4 or 5 years old. Yeah. So you're 28 today.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Knowing Brooke. You don't have any Brooke issues, do you?
I don't think so. That's for the other podcast.
The next podcast. Worship leader issues. The next podcast is pastor issues, which is a whole series of that one. So you grew up in East LA, and that was it had an English congregation and a Spanish congregation.
Yeah.
With an English speaking pastor
right.
and a Spanish speaking pastor as well. Yeah. So you started going there. I think Eddie Ledesma, do you remember him?
Yes.
He was a pastor there too.
Right, right.
And I think before that it was Mr. Fenwick. Brooke's dad was a pastor at that church. So do you remember Eddie?
I do.
Okay.
I do, yeah.
Okay. And so now were you part of this church? When did you come back to the church? Because you were part of other churches, but going to school there.
Yeah. So
when did you start attending that church?
So we went to school there. We were part of the school in the early 90s. I was in kinder and then all the way to third grade.
Okay.
After that, we went to public school the last 2 years of elementary and middle school. So I think in the middle of middle school, so it must have been 5 years, let's say 5 years from the time that I stopped going there
okay.
as a student,
right.
that I returned to join the youth group on the weekends.
Now, how did you? What made you decide to go back there? I mean, were you invited?
You know, they always had the spring and the autumn celebrations, the fall festivals,
okay.
the spring festivals. So even though we weren't going to school there, we would still go to the events.
And then you were invited
yeah.
to be part of that. Do you remember who was the pastor then when you were invited?
Yeah, so my sisters started going to that youth group that they had on Friday nights, and Frank Cortez was the pastor at that time.
Okay.
So they said, hey, my brother plays guitar, like, you know.
Now, Frank's a good guy. I like Frank.
Yeah.
And he was pastor, and he got messed up by that church and the denomination, too. But he was there for, I think, a year, pastoring that church. But he also has 3 sons, right?
3 sons, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Tell us about that relationship between his sons and you.
Yeah, so they ended up making up a lot of the worship team at Light and Life
okay.
on the weekend. So Jerry was on drums, Thomas ended up picking up drums as well, Andrew picked up guitar, Jerry picked up keyboard, and we had a friend, Ray and Eloy, that played guitar and bass. So, you know, we became this little group of musicians.
Okay, now this is interesting to me because a few weeks ago, you led our worship team, and you did this incredible guitar solo in there, which I was going, how in the world does this guy do this? I mean, just so effortless. And then I find out later on that you were self-taught to play the guitar. And I'm just fascinated with that. And so where did you, in your mind, say, you know what? I'm inspired to play the guitar. There had to be something on TV or something. They go, I want to be just like him. And we don't have the money to send me to some school to learn. And I'm going to learn myself. Is that right? What was there anyone that inspired you that you go, dang, I want to play like him?
Yeah, that started at a young age. I started at 5 years old.
Okay, and who was that?
That was Elvis.
Oh, really?
Somehow I heard about Elvis, and then I saw him, and he looked interesting. I heard his music. It sounded energetic. So
you were inspired by Elvis and him playing the guitar, and you said, I want to be like Elvis at five?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
It sounds weird.
I'm 5 years old, so I'm sure you did the hip shake, the whole thing, right? They could have videos of that. I'm 5 years old. So, but the thing is, what you're laughing at, that inspired you. And to me, I think you're an incredible guitarist who are self-taught. So how did you end up teaching yourself?
So my mom encouraged me too. I always loved music. Since a young age, I would buy, you know, I would save up money. I would buy Elvis CDs and all these different CDs. And then when I was about 12 years old, my mom decided to get me a guitar for my birthday.
Okay.
I didn't ask for it.
And the thing is, it wasn't the most expensive guitar.
No, it was the $30 guitar.
Yeah. Okay, $30. Yeah. I mean, it's a good beginning guitar, but yeah, I mean, definitely. Obviously you're not playing a $30 guitar here at the worship team.
Yeah.
Well, you're good. You're really good. You can make a $30 guitar sound like that. Yeah. So anyway, your mother gave you a guitar and you just kind of self-taught it yourself.
Definitely, yeah. And I had a lot of friends that I would play with, and I had a few websites back then. There was just a few websites that would show you.
So you went on this. So you and your little padres, or your little possum, or whatever you call you guys, you were a band, right? Okay.
Yeah.
You had a name for your band.
Yeah. Through playing at Latin Life for a few years, I also met a bass player from the Spanish congregation, and then Thomas, we were playing together in the English church.
Okay.
So we formed a band at about 15, 16 years old, and we ended up calling it High Majestad.
High Majestad.
Yeah.
Okay. And where does that come from, High Majestad?
So the word Majestad it's a Spanish word, it's pronounced Majestad. And it just means majesty. And so I got the idea for that. I think when I was sitting through a Friday night Spanish worship service, and it was up on the screen.
Okay.
Part of the lyrics of a song.
So. Dang, that's a good title.
Yeah.
So then you began going to like different parties and playing. And how did that work?
Yeah, so we start playing. We start writing our own songs. And being from East L.A., there's a huge... backyard scene, even to this day, backyard, all kinds of music, great musicians coming out of East LA. But then we also started playing a lot of clubs in Hollywood. Okay. So about 18, 19, I was, you know, going into 21 and over clubs, just enough to play, and then, you know, getting
So you would be on the worship team on the Sundays, and then you would be at the nightclubs during the evenings and stuff like that. And so this is where so far, you're having a positive experience with the church and stuff like that.
Mm.
And there was a pastor that you and I know, we won't name the pastor, that basically, in conversations you and I had, he kind of replaced, in a sense, a father figure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I had a lot of friends, you know, growing up and playing music and all that. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, every young man looks for role models. You need that. You need somebody older to kind of, you know, show you how to navigate through life. So yeah, you know, just kind of, you know, by default, the pastors at Light and Life ended up, you know, becoming those role models.
Those role models. And it was working fine for a while.
Yeah.
And you were leading worship, and he was kind of, I would assume, mentoring in a sense, or...
Sure, just
being a positive role model for it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I think this was 4 or 5 years ago, that there was some inappropriate behavior that came out that the pastor had to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember when you first heard about it?
Yeah, you know, I think it was right around Christmas time, and yeah,
okay,
it came up one night, and the whole church was kind of flabbergasted. Yeah.
Okay, so how does that affect you? Not only that you didn't have a positive father role model, that basically at 8 years old you jammed, you locked into this guy that said, okay, this is my positive role model. He's a pastor. He's a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
He's consistent. He has a family and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you just go, what?
Yeah, it took me a while to realize what had happened and why I was reacting to that situation the way that I did. Not exactly in a negative way, but it was definitely a loss. It was a very familiar loss.
Right.
And then I think a few weeks after kind of reflecting on it, I realized that it, you know, kind of mirrored an experience that I had when I was younger, which is, you know, when my parents separated and my dad was out of the picture all of a sudden.
Right.
And how do I deal with that absence now?
Yeah.
So I realized that it stirred up those emotions at the very least.
Absolutely.
This second time. But I didn't feel as incapable as I did when I was 8 years old. You know?
Right. Now how old? You were 24,
I was
23?
21.
Okay, you were 21 years old. For me, it seemed like 4 years ago, but yeah. It was a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
And the reason I know this is because I had to come in and kind of stabilize the church as much as I could with a team like Bob Monick, Bonick, and I had to come in, and we were part of the Minister of Educational Guidance Board.
Mm-hmm.
So it was highly stressed for everybody, you know. And so did that affect you spiritually?
Yeah, I think it did, and I think it came around. It doesn't sound didn't sound right to say, but it came around at the right time in that I was struggling with faith, and I think what it was, I was looking for something deeper to be able to grab onto, instead of just, you know, the faith that you grow up with, you know, through high school and stuff like that. You always need to go deeper.
Right.
So I think I was looking for that and seeing the church and the structure kind of come toppling down on itself.
Right.
Then it's like, okay, then where is God? Because he wasn't in that structure.
Right.
Yeah. So it made me, you know, look deeper.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Where is God? Where was God in some of the lessons that you're going? Because a lot of people look at this and they just leave the church. They go, I'm done with this. I'm done with this God stuff. I'm done with this. A bunch of hypocrites and stuff like that. And so what you're saying is there's a whole, I can grow deep in faith, which for somebody in their early 20s, that's deep.
Mm-hmm.
So can you articulate, like, where was God? Or was God in that situation? Or was God using the situation? In hindsight.
Yeah, so that's a tough question. I think God strengthened us in that, and all of us that were part of that church, and all of us that needed that church. There were a lot of people that needed that church, that needed that support.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, not to get too biblical here, but, you know, something along the lines of you strike the shepherd and the flock kind of, you know, scurries, it separates or whatever.
Okay.
So that's kind of what happened. All of a sudden we have all these, you know, all these churchgoers, our pastor's gone. What do we do?
Okay.
And everybody went into a different direction. Not a bad way. You know, there was different churches.
Right.
But,
I think because you shared with me that you were on the worship team before this happened.
Yeah.
Your team of people were doing it. And all of a sudden, that everyone left, but you were still leading the worship.
Yeah.
By yourself.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, that's, and I was thinking about it just right now, too.
Right.
You know, again, my father was out of the picture at a young age. I felt like I was responsible for my sisters, you know?
Okay.
So I think that's part of my character, and that's kind of how I saw the church, and what I saw it kind of falling apart. Maybe it was kind of like a, you know, and so I said, well, I got to stick it out, and I got to be able to be here for whoever decides to stay. To the point where one Sunday I realized it was just me, two new worship team members, the pastor and the family, and those were the only people in the church.
Oh, wow.
And I said, yeah, maybe it's time for me to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you talked about this, that now you have a sense of responsibility for even since not letting the people in the church down and your sisters down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's almost like I can't have this happen to them twice as well.
Sure, yeah.
So you kind of took that role of a shepherd or a father role, right?
Yeah, you know, and I want to... Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely did it, and I want to answer that question, well, where was God in that, that situation?
Where was God? Because my faith is hanging right now.
I think God was leading every one of us in a different direction.
Okay.
You know, like, okay, this time, this situation is over, and we all had to grow. We were all very uncomfortable.
Right.
But I don't think he left us. He just... His church grew in a different direction,
right,
you know.
Okay.
And for me, it became a time to get serious with a lot of things in my life. Get serious with myself as a person. So that's
now between where now I remember Brooklyn, you and I met a long time ago, and I offered you a mentor position. You know, now you have another pastor that's offering to mentor you and offering you a position. And I'm just thinking about this now. And if I was you, I'd go, dang, I wouldn't, no way. There's no way I'm going to look at anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you look at me as a father figure, because that would be the worst mistake in your life. But I'm talking about that I represent that position.
Yeah.
And going back in the church, that how do you go from... Everything just got broken up. And how do you decide, okay... And it took you a while. It took you 6 months to 9 months to decide...
Yeah.
From the offer I gave you to you accepting it.
Yeah.
So how do you go back into a worship leadership, too, into a church?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that's tied into that, but... I think as far as what happened, you know, at Light and Life, you know, the church broke up, and you know, we mentioned this before. The reason I was, I think, able to deal with it in my own way is because I related to, you know, the people that made mistakes in that church. I didn't think that I was any better. I think I had made mistakes that were just as bad in my own way.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of. There were a lot of things. There was a lot that I needed to work through, and I had a few years to work through that. I made a lot of changes in my life.
Right.
You know, I moved, and then I started different jobs. I completely disconnected myself from the life that I had had up until that point. And so, when you guys approached me to take on a position here at Marina, I just wasn't sure if I was ready. That doesn't mean that when I accepted, I felt ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really wanted some time to think about it, because just like you're saying, it was, I had to think, do I really want to go back into the situation? I just came out of something that wasn't, that didn't end well. Do I feel ready? Do I feel responsible?
Right.
Do I feel like I can grow further?
Because I think in a conversation that when all this was hitting the fan with the pastor and the other person that was involved, that you were telling me, and I was surprised, that you had a sense of responsibility. That was going, how does one mind, like, you weren't involved in this situation.
Yeah.
How do you say, I'm partly responsible for this as well?
I think this is the core of it. I was 17, 18,
19, 20. Right.
You know, a lot of partying going on, playing in
See, a lot
kids.
Of partying goes on 17, 18, 19, 20. You're not sure about those 4 years.
Somewhere in there.
Okay.
In there.
So go ahead.
And playing a lot of gigs and just being part of that. That became part of, you know, us trying to pursue music.
Right.
Was being part of these scenes. And, you know, you're young, you want to party, all that stuff. So, at the same time, I was also on the worship team at that church.
Right.
So, I did have some responsibility,
okay.
you know, to the church and to the people that were watching me. So, in that way, I felt responsible. Like, I could have been a better example through that time.
Right, right.
There was no way that I could judge somebody else when I was not...
When you were worshiping and partying and the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, let's jump over to just the 3 weeks ago. Part of the worship song, you put the sets together. You take turns with Angela, Brooke, and you doing the sets. And one of the sets that Angela was singing was a song that was written called Humbly Pray.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the title of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting into this, and I'm going, and I'm looking at the screen to follow the words, and I'd see your name copyrighted. And I go, dude, Giovanni wrote this song
mm-hmm.
about humbly prayer. And I was wondering, from all this experience that you're going through, and then now you're leading a whole congregation into worship and a song that you sang,
mm-hmm.
which is deep to me. Where did that song come from? Obviously, it came from an experience that you had.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about writing that song.
That song, I had the chord progression. I had written that first, and I liked it. I thought mm-hmm. it was good. I'll use it. I put it away for a few months. I moved. I went through a lot of different changes.
Right.
And a lot of time of restoration and healing and being in the Word a lot. So I think it definitely came from that, from this weight being lifted off of my shoulders gradually.
Right.
This weight being lifted off my heart gradually. So it was a song that was basically, I know I'm not good enough to receive anything, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know I'm not worth this much. I know the mistakes that I've made. I feel like there's nothing else. I feel like there's no one else there.
Right.
So what was my answer throughout all those times, all those years? And it was just to pray,
right.
humbly, and just to, So
I think it's an excellent song, and obviously, it was written out of some experiences that you have, and I think. It's important to, if we have a spirit of humility,
mm-hmm.
that it helps us a lot to live the life that honors Christ.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us, when we have pride problem or sense of entitlement or bitterness, we can end up doing some stupid things, you know, and saying this.
Yeah.
So therefore, you've been part of our church for 3 or 4 years. But you're also continuing your schooling as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm amazed that not only you're self-taught, but you made a commitment and to really stick with college,
mm-hmm.
to get a music degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so how is that going with for you?
It's going great. I was playing in my band. Going back, I was playing in the band for a few years. Got to play with. Countless great musicians, studied musicians, great improvisers and jazz players and rock players. I stopped all that part of my life.
Yeah.
I needed to make a change.
Right.
I needed to reevaluate who I was and where I was going. I needed to stop partying as much.
As much?
Not just that.
No, that's okay. That's funny.
So, you know, I moved away, I got a full-time job, and I realized I want to go back to school.
Right.
Music is still my passion. If I'm going to be, you know, behind a desk for 8 hours a day, might as well be in school.
Right.
So I decided to go back and study music. I'm currently going to East LA College. And I wasn't really sure. I just knew I had to go learn this language of music that these great players understood.
Okay.
And so I've been going there for about 4 years now, and I'm going to graduate this June, and I'll be transferring out in the fall.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a long, long road, but
at least the road's going.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah.
Two questions as I end the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The first question is about ministry. The second question is about family.
Mm-hmm.
The first question would be, if you know as 8, 9, well, let's say a 14-year-old teenager
mm-hmm.
that has been abandoned by his father, and that's not hypothetical. There's tons of them out there,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a girl or a boy
mm-hmm.
That has been in your position, that what, if you could say something,
mm-hmm.
what is some of the advice that you would give? When you were, if you can give yourself advice when you were 14, what did you need to hear? Or what do you think they need to hear now?
I don't think I could tell them anything to get them through it
because
every situation would be different. I would really need to understand, you know, the situation.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that I couldn't give them something that they could take with them.
Yeah.
Because these are emotions that it would take them years to understand.
Right.
So nothing that I could really say at that moment would get them But what worked for me was finding a passion,
okay.
you know, finding something that I absolutely loved, something that I was able to give all of my focus and attention right. to for hours. Okay. And it might not be music. It could be a sport. It could right. be painting. It could be writing. It right. could be, you know, hanging around people. Everybody has different passions. So I would just say find something that where you can be creative, where you can pour your love into. And I think that'll get you going.
No. That's yeah. perfect. Perfect vibe. The second thing, too, our church is full of people that have been hurt by the church. Mm-hmm. Hopefully not this church, but... and I've noticed a lot of people that they've been hurt by the church. They'll come to church, but they don't get involved. There's mm-hmm. no way they're mm-hmm. going to get involved because they don't want to get to know me as a pastor because they don't want to have their expectations broken and they don't want to get hurt. Because I deal with this all the time. So if you were asking somebody, if they were asking you, Giovanni, how did you get over this? Or did you get over it? And how do you, from this experience that you had at Light Life, where just you saw the whole church closed down and the whole school now is closed, that to get involved in a church, get involved in a church, how does one do it? Or you just ignore everything that's happened and just have this blind faith?
You know, I don't think I can answer that question directly, but I will say...
Both questions you can.
Yeah, right, right. No, but I will say that those people, when they're in churches, they do a lot for me, you know, by them still kind of staying on the sidelines and them kind okay. of, you know...
those people meaning... The people that are on the sidelines.
They're on the side. Okay. Well, what we would call the sidelines, okay. right? But they're still coming to church,
right?
And still taking in, and still you know saying hi, and still you know right. fellowshipping. They keep the church real. Okay. You know,
yeah.
Like they, you know, we go up there and we worship and all that, and we can you know finish worship or finish yeah. the service and connect on just any level.
Right, right. Know?
And it keeps this air of authenticity and openness
right.
in the body. And so I think okay. that's what I would say about that.
Okay. Yeah. No, perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Thank you, Giovanni. Well, this was a good interview. I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
If you guys are listening to the podcast and enjoyed it and think anyone else should listen to it, just send someone the link. Or if you have any comments, just send us an email that if this meant anything to you, good or bad, I'm open to it. Easy, you know. And remember, every day is a gift from God. And join us this coming Sunday. Are you going to be on the worship team?
Yes.
Okay. So you'll see Giovanni up there leading the worship. One of his frustrations is when he's leading the worship, leading a bunch of mannequins that are not participating.
What? Yo, wait.
Do at least sing back, okay? Don't just stand there. I'm just speaking from my house. I preach like that, and then sometimes I just look at you like, did you say something? So anyway, remember, every day is a gift from God, and also, actually, I wonder if I'll be back. No, I won't be here. This Sunday, I'll be doing a wedding.
Okay.
I'll finish that. So remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. God bless you, and I'll see you guys next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. No, that was good.